Were the Depression years of the 1930s different than the years before, and possible in what way?
Well, they were different in that the carpet was jerked out from under so quickly in 1929 when the Depression hit and the stock market went down. Of course, there were a lot of suicides at that time, and our banks failed. And in addition to that, we had a drought. It was a very severe drought and windstorms. You remember the Dust Bowl area hit the plains here? And that was our big problem here. I think if we had not had the drought with the Depression, we wouldn't have felt it nearly as much as we did. And we did not feel it like the cities did because we had no bread lines here, whatever. The relief or the aid that was given by the county commissioners or people helping each other.
Can you account for not having any bread lines here? This is one of the things when we look in the history book that they keep focusing on the big cities.
I think it's due to the fact that this is strictly an agricultural area. We had no factories to, well, we had Holly Sugar, it was here at that time. But we had no factories to close down. Consequently, there were no great layoffs among the populace.
Was unemployment a big problem here?
It was a big problem, yes, because there were a lot of people here that that needed work that couldn't get work. And the people, I think most of the unemployed people really that we saw here were the people that were going through. Every freight train that went up and down the track over here on the Burlington Railroad, there would be from 5 to 10 men riding on each car if the weather was so that they could. And a freight train going west would be loaded with men riding on these cars, and another freight train coming from the other direction would be loaded, the men would be going the other way. Everyone was drifting back and forth trying to find work. The rumors, of course, would hit that there was work out west and there was work back east, and those in the east would go west and vice versa. But the people going through, I think, were the ones that we noticed the most. Because people were knocking on your door wanting a job or wanting a handout, or they'd do anything for you that they could to get a meal.
Out of this, your observation, did the people's attitude towards themselves change during this period? You spoke a little while ago of
pride. People were proud, much more so then, I think, than they are now. We had no welfare, we had no Department of Social Services, we had no aid for dependent children, we had no government programs really at all compared to what we have now. And people were a good deal more independent. And as I told you previously, we had some older couples here that were too proud to admit that they were starving to death. And their neighbors finally awakened to the fact that these people were in need and went to the county commissioners and got them help. And even then, the people were, most of them were very reluctant to accept it. People, I think, were more proud.
Do you think that the people out in the rural areas, the farmers and this sort of thing, were harder hit than those here in town, or vice versa?
I think it was all about the same. The farmers were hit real badly because of the drought and the windstorms. And consequently, they couldn't raise anything. But the people in town couldn't have bought it if they had raised it, so it didn't make a whole lot of difference. My grandfather, Collier, lived about 14 miles north of here in the area called Chestnut Valley. And he was a mule raiser when he came out here from Kentucky, and a horse buyer and horse trader. And he had a bunch of horses out there. And there was no market. He'd sold his mules, and there was no market for these horses, and he had no grass left for them. The grass was down to what we call nigger wool, where all the grass is gone and just the roots are there in the soil. I guess we shouldn't use that word nigger anymore, should we? But we called it nigger wool. But I went out there probably in 1932 or 3 and brought 6 horses to town. It took me all day to get them in here. They were poor. I took him to the sale barn, and after the, the charges they made there at the sale barn, the commission and the feed and everything that they charge against the sale, I got $5.85 for those 6 horses. And everything else was going about the same way.
Did you perceive any attitude change of people in regard to other people, neighbors, rural, town, this sort of thing? If there's any great attitude change that you could
I don't think so. This is a small community, always has been a small community. Our county population at that time was pretty high, as I remember, because there were so many people on homesteads around. But I think they all had a pretty good sense of rapport before that, and were pretty much going to help each other. So as I remembered, I don't think we had much change in attitude, no.
How did the people take care of their bills and their, well, living expense, if you will, during this time? How did they eke out an existence?
Well, we were in business at that time. My father and mother were in business. And a lot of people traded for their bills. They would trade you produce on a bill. Or if they could, they would come in and work for you, to work a bill out, those that didn't have money. And it was successful at times. Of course, there were a lot of bills at that time that were just written off. The grocerman, I know, especially had a difficult time, because the grocerman all operated on credit. And they extended a little bit too much credit, and a lot of them went bankrupt, or several of them did around in the area, I know.
Where did you fit in at this period in time, let's say the early 30s?
I was in high school. Yeah, I graduated in 1931. And I left here in the fall of 1931 and went to Nebraska Wesleyan University. And things were pretty tough. I went to Wesleyan University that year, and then I skipped a year and stayed home and worked to gather up a little more money. And then I went back to Nebraska University. I transferred over to Nebraska, and I went there the years 33 and 4. And I worked as a night clerk at a hotel there for a while, and I couldn't take that at night and go to school in the daytime and get along very well. And I finally got a job at a restaurant. But there was a line waiting for jobs at all those places. If you got a job, you were fortunate. And if you got out of line and quit, or if you were let go, the man could pick up his telephone and have somebody to replace you inside of a half an hour. It was that's the way things were down there. And I think the university people today, I know a lot of the students have a hard time, but there was no student loan program at that time that I know of. And the only way you could go was to either go down there and work, or if your parents were in a financial position so that they could send you, you could go. And my parents, thank God, helped me, or I'd never made it through.
Were there some cases where people were not able to cope with the depression? And
yeah, we had a high rate of suicide here, as well as in the East. You know, the stockbrokers were jumping off of the buildings, and the bankers were jumping off buildings. And we had a pretty high suicide rate there through the 30s here.
Did you have a lot of people move away from here?
Yes, I think so. What happened, one of the things that happened, all of these people on these homesteads, take like Chestnut Valley out there where my grandparents on my father's side lived. They settled that place out there in 1911. My grandfather and 3 of his children came out here and took out homesteads that joined. And he also had some aunts and uncles and so forth that joined there. So they had quite a piece of land in Chestnut Valley. But that whole area out there, they used to have a meeting over what was known as the Francel School. And they'd have dances over there on Saturday night, and they'd have church on Sunday afternoon, and the building would be full, because there were a lot of people out there. There was people come out and took up 160 or 320 acres, and no way they could live on it. And of course, between the Depression and the drought, it just wiped them out. So a lot of those people moved to town. I don't think too many moved away because they couldn't afford it.
This was a a time of, you know, real tough time. And we talked about how some people handled it. Take your, like your rural people, what did they do for entertainment to try and pass the time or get a laugh or this sort of thing?
Well, as I mentioned previously, of course, they used to have a lot of dances around. I played in a dance band during the 30s for a long time, and we played for dances all over the country. I don't know where you'd go to find a public dance now. Go down to Little Moon and dance to the jukebox, yeah. But to find a public dance, I don't know where you'd go to find one. And people danced, they played cards, used to picnic a lot when the weather was nice. And when I was a kid, we had house parties. We didn't get the gang together and go out someplace. There were several fairly good-sized houses in our group, and like Clyde Smith's house over here, and the ones that my folks used to live in was known as the old Platt's house. Most of them had hardwood floors, and get the gang of kids together, and they'd have a house party. And we did things like that.
How did the people help each other through these times, or did they?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they did, because I know a lot of the merchants extended a lot of credit that they shouldn't have, and a lot of men signed other people's notes that they shouldn't have. My father was one of them. Some of his friends needed money, and he signed notes for them, and of course they went under, and then he was responsible for the note also. Matter of fact, one man committed suicide over it. He was just exactly like this. My father had signed his note. He was a businessman here in town. I won't mention his name, but he was a businessman here in town, and he finally got so despondent that he did commit suicide. But people, I think, you know, all in all, were really pretty good about helping each other. We didn't, as I say, we didn't feel the depression here like they did in the cities and like they did back east. We just didn't feel it here. We felt it, but it didn't hit us the blow that it hit the people in the east.
What do you think possibly were the very worst years?
I think about in the early 30s, I think were the worst years, because that's when the windstorms came in. And what we did have was kind of blown away. And it seems to me that those would have been the worst years.
Did the people blame the government for the whole Depression era, or part of it, or?
I don't think so. No, of course, I was young at that time, but government wasn't in our business end like it is now. And we didn't expect things from the government like people do now. I don't know of any government farm programs that we had. We had a county agent here that helped the farmers along, you know, and gave them advice. We had the experiment farm out here from the University of Wyoming. But as far as the loan programs and finance programs and the surplus programs and everything that we have now, I don't believe we had any of those. I may be wrong. I'm not a farmer, but I don't remember having those programs at all.
Were there any people around here that capitalized on the situation and possibly made money or invested their money so that, you know, eventually when they came out of it?
There are always a few that are pretty sharp. This didn't happen here, but there were instances like this all over the country. I was down in Colorado Springs one day, and I was visiting with an old gent, and he was quite a character. We were at a meeting down there, and I could see by the jewelry and everything that he was wearing that he was apparently quite wealthy. And he came from the northern part of the state, and I asked him what he did, and he said he was a banker. And he said he'd retired, and we got to visiting, and he said, I sat there in the bank, you know, and I had a little money saved up. And when a foreclosure would come up on a good farm, he says, I saw to it that I got that farm. I think that there are only a certain amount of people that are doing that, and I couldn't call him a vulture. He was a good businessman, but he was. Somebody would have gotten the farm. He was just smart enough that he got in and got the good ones.
Were the banks or big business blamed for the Depression?
Oh, I really don't think so. Everybody tends to blame the stock market, but from what I read of history, the stock market was just a product of the Depression. When the stock market exploded there in 1929. And the reason, of course, I could go in, and if I had anything at all, I could go into the stock market and buy on maybe a 10% margin. I could put down 10% of the money that was required to buy that stock, and they'd give me the rest on margin. And billions of dollars worth of stock was out at that time was sold on a margin like that. And when things got bad, then these brokers started to call for their money, and the people didn't have it. So the stock became worthless, and that snowballed. And that's why so many people committed suicide. Now, you can't buy stock like that now on a margin like that. So we're a lot more sound than we were then. But I don't think people blame big business. I really don't know. Everybody was running pretty high there through the 20s. And the World War I was over. I remember that. And well, we thought we had it so nothing was going to happen again, but it did.
Were there wealthy people that suddenly became poor?
Yes, there were. There were. A lot of people came out here from the east, Iowa, northern Missouri, in that area. Most of those people that settled out here were from in that area, northern Missouri, southern Iowa, along that area, eastern Nebraska. A lot of people, quite a few people came out here with money and built some pretty nice homes and had some pretty nice farms out here. But the drought and the Depression wiped them out, because what they could raise, they couldn't sell. Farmers were burning corn here at one time. They couldn't sell it. They were burning it in the stove.
Can you come to the phone just a minute?
Go ahead. Shut up.
Maybe we've taken a turn to the role of the church during the Depression. Was there any big changes, or did they play a big part in the life of the people here, or were people so down that they didn't go to church, or what's your observations?
No, I think our church kept right on going. As well as I remember, I think we had a pretty strong church right on through. Of course, these poor ministers lived on nothing, and everybody expected them to live on nothing. And they did. They lived on nothing. I remember our parsonage was furnished over there with hand-me-down furniture that they just gathered up around the people in the congregation. It is pretty sad, because some of those ministers had big families. They were nice people. But I think they did a real good job, and I think the church people did a pretty good job looking out for each other.
So it was a community of people there, you know.
Right.
Holding together influence.
Right.
What role did women play in the Depression?
Well, of course, it was a completely different situation with the women then than it is now. The women didn't hold jobs like they do now.
Were there for women?
No, there weren't very many jobs for women. You know, a few of them worked in the grocery stores as bookkeepers, and there were the stenographers that worked for the attorneys. Some of the women taught school, but they're just aside from secretarial jobs and nurses and those things, there just wasn't employment for women like there is now. There was a time here when our school system would hesitate to hire a married teacher, you know. So it's a completely different world.
So they weren't able to go out and find a job very easily support the family.
Yeah, if they got a job, it was scrubbing floors or washing windows or some menial task like that, usually.
What effect did depression have on the children, say, school-age people?
Well, I think in a adverse sort of a way, I think maybe it helped them because they had to work. There was a job they had to work. They had to get out and scrounge for what they wanted. And I think maybe in that way it was good because it taught a lot of people to work that would not have been working otherwise. And it also taught them the value of a dollar.
Did you learn any lessons from going through the depression that maybe has stuck with you or has influenced the way you have operated, you know, long past the time the depression is over?
Well, I think it teaches you a lot of caution in your business dealings, a lot of caution. And you learn not to splurge and you learn not to get too far in over your head if you can help it, because this thing could happen again. I don't think it will, but we didn't think it would then. But it could happen again. I don't understand why it hasn't happened sooner with the national debt and the balance of trade the way it is. But so far, we're lucky. More lucky than smart, I think.
Was there irrigation down here in the valley during the 30s?
Yes, there was. And the water was short. And one man got killed over it. Two men got in a fight over a headgate, over who was to get the water that day and how much. And one hit the other with a shovel and killed him.
Were the farmers down here in the valley any more prosperous than those up on the dry land?
Yes. Yeah, the irrigated farmers were. Yeah, these irrigated farmers, you know, they've always grown a crop of beets. They wanted to grow beets. So as well as I can remember, we very rarely have ever lost very many sugar beets. And they didn't raise corn at that time. They insisted that it would not mature, so they didn't raise much corn. And maybe the corn they had at that time wouldn't. But they raised other things. They used to irrigate some small grain, irrigate their hay. And they raised things. The big trouble there, of course, was after they got it raised was the market. There wasn't much market for it. They shot a lot of cattle. I don't know, you probably don't remember that program, but the government bought a lot of cattle and went right out on the range and shot them dead and left them lay right there on the range to get rid of the surplus of cattle.
That happened right here in Goshen County?
That happened, you bet your life. I've been out on the prairie and seen 40, 50, 60 head of cattle laying dead there, where the government bought those cattle and came out and killed them.
What was the thinking or response of the owners of these cattle?
Well,
did they think that this was going to do any good?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
Dale.
Going back to the sugar beets, was there migrant labor that would come in and work the beets?
Yes.
Even during the depression?
Yeah, and a lot of the labor came from old Mexico. They had the sugar company had a camp down here, a tar paper camp, that was in behind where the pellet bins are now, in west of there. And it was a pretty tough place because the people that came up here were not the highest class people in the world. And they would put these Mexicans up there during the beet season in these tar paper shacks. Then after they took that out, they built one out of brick that is on the corner right south of the Holly, or was, I should say. There used to be a schoolhouse there, and they took that out and built several rows of apartments and used those for a number of years. And then I don't know what happened. I think the farmers started providing their own labor housing or something, but Holly got out of the housing business with the migrant labor.
Well, how did the depression affect the migrants? Any idea?
I couldn't see that they were any worse off then than they than they were before. It's a whole different picture on migrant labor now than it was then. As I say, what we got up there then was kind of the bottom of the barrel from down south. And they were a pretty rough outfit. They were a pretty rough outfit. And these people that we get up here now, you know, they have a lot of advantages in there. They're getting pretty well educated, and I see their children over here in the schools. My wife and I went by there today, and here are these kids over here at school getting some schooling. None of this existed before. They had the kids out there in the beet field with them.
Do you have any recollection of what they might draw as wages, or somebody working in a grocery store downtown, or this sort of thing?
Well, my wife and I got married in 1937, and I was making $90 a month, and she was making $20 a month working for a dentist. So we were making $110 a month between us.
And that was probably considered pretty fair at that time.
Pretty fair, right. Yeah. She's working for $5 a week. I was working for $90 a month. And we lived on it. You know, we didn't live real good, but we lived on it. We ate on her $5 a week, by the way. And with $5, you'd buy a real good pair of shoes. But it took quite a while to make that $5. I'll tell you, we built that building on Main Street down there, Don, where the donut shop is, in 1932. The common labor, the people that were pouring the cement and wheeling the stuff in, you know, and doing the digging and everything, 30 cents an hour. And the skilled work, the carpenters and the brick masons, 75 cents an hour was the going wage at that time.
They were probably tickled to death to get.
That's right. That's right. There are one man still here in town, I won't name names, but one man in town was a plasterer, and he was quite a fighter. And a young man came to town who still lives here and is still alive, and underbid him on the plastering on that building down there. And the old fella came down and tried to beat him up, and they had a fight. And he broke a bunch of ribs on this younger fella, and he went right ahead and plastered that and stuccoed that building with those broken ribs. Now, how he did it, I don't know. But I've had broken ribs, and I just couldn't begin to do work like that. But they had a fight right there on the job. That's how tight it was.
What did the Depression do to the older generation, the people that were retirement age and this sort of thing?
I can't really answer that. Things have changed so much. When I was young, we didn't have any nursing homes or retirement homes. There might have been a few in the cities, you know, for the wealthier people. But I think the families more or less took care of them. And the ones that the families couldn't take care of, the county had what we call a poor farm out here. A few people lived out there. And then they bought a house down at 15th and West C Street. And that was a welfare home there for a long time after they got it started there in the 30s. And it doesn't compare to what we have now. So I think the people, maybe their families looked after most of them. And the people that didn't have families, I really don't know.
I looked today, but I've forgotten the years that your dad was sheriff.
1920 to 1926.
Yeah. So
they had to run every 2 years then.
During that time, he was just ahead of the Depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see. Do you recall any advice or things that he might have told you regarding the Depression after you were into the Depression or later, this sort
no,
of thing?
No, his big thing was is to don't spread out too far and spread too thin, you know. That was his big thing. Don't take on any big obligations. And he missed some pretty good business deals because he wouldn't take them on, too. But that was his big thing.
Were there any government programs out here in the 30s, maybe the later part of the 30s, that you thought maybe really did some good to help turn this thing around?
Oh, yes. I don't know whether it helped turn it around or not. There's a lot of question on that, of course. Get a lot of opinions on it. But the WPA and the CCC, the Works Progress Administration, and the Civilian Conservation Corps, that the Civilian Conservation Corps built a lot of these parks, like Guernsey Park up here, a lot of the parks around the country, and it got these young fellows off the street. It gave them something to do, gave them a place to live, gave them food, and they got a little education along with it. And then the WPA, they, you know, we panned this WPA program a lot because the fellows really did a lot of sitting around on it, but at the same time, we got a lot of things done around Torrington here on the WPA that wouldn't have been done otherwise, and it gave those fellows a little bit of incentive. They had a job. It wasn't a very good job, but they did have a job, and they could keep a little bit of their pride and have a little bit of money to buy the beans.
I think
we shot a half a tape already.